Hi, this is Tom Colicchio of Kraft and Top Chef, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 FM, AM 820, and WNYC.org.
Martha Stewart has been shaping our tastes, refining our palates, organizing our closets, encouraging our creativity, and decorating our homes for more than 25 years now. And now she's prepared to guide us through that final challenge, aging with grace. Her latest book, Living the Good Long Life, is published by Clarkson Potter Publishers, and I'm very happy that it has brought her to our show. Welcome.
Ah, nice to see you.
Should I be insulted that when you want to talk about sex and drugs, you go to Andy Cohen or Matt Lauer, and when you want to talk about aging, you come to me?
Oh, well, those programs were supposed to be about this book. They got a little off track.
Well, I'll pretty much focus on what you're talking about here. Those shows forced you to kind of to go along with the joke. You're usually thought of as a serious person. Do you have to learn to laugh at yourself?
I've always laughed at myself. I always, and my family laughs at me. So, it's kind of a round table at our place. I have a good sense of humor that a lot of people don't realize, I think. And, I've tried to, take some of that sense of humor and apply it to the subject matter of graceful aging because, it can be a dire problem for a lot of us, but we have to laugh at our frailties and succeed where we have strength.
Well, do you think it gets easier to do as we get older?
To laugh?
Yeah, because I think as we get older, at least our sense of self perhaps is a little stronger.
I don't know. I think in America, as in many Western countries, the process of aging is not celebrated. And it is not respected as it is in some other countries. In Asia, for example, the elders are treated much, much better than they are here. And I think people – I have friends whose parents I have never met. My mother was always in my kitchen or always at my house and always when I went on a vacation, she was included. I just didn't think of not doing that. And yet many people do not include the elders in their lifestyle.
Do you think that's why we're seeing so many people have plastic surgery these days?
I think that plastic surgery is a sort of a stopgap for many of us. I think it is something that is almost imposed on us because the youthfulness and the youthful looking people seem to just get more attention.
Well, you say in your book that you've never had plastic surgery, but you
I haven't.
And you look younger than the age
yes.
I've read that you are.
I do. But
have you availed yourself of other appearance enhancers like Botox or
– Oh, no. No, I don't. I don't like any of those things.
And you don't do those Estee Lauder things that promise you that you're going to look younger.
I try every single new cosmetic cure for everything because that's my job. I mean, to try new things is my job. So I'm always slathering on the serums, the creams, I do a mask every single morning on my skin, but it helps.
They do work then.
Oh, yes.
Of course, genes help as well.
Good genes helps. My mother had really smooth skin at 93 years old and not very many wrinkles. And I think it really does help to have good genetics. But you can help. And in the book, and it's not just about a cure-all for looking good. It's a book about feeling good and aging well.
And when did you start thinking about this as a subject? I mean, you established the Martha Stewart Center for Living at Mount Sinai,
yes,
which
I did,
is all about gerontology.
I did that for my mom, basically, because she was such a successful ager. She was still driving at 90. She was the chauffeur for her younger friends who had to give up driving because of something or other. She had never had an accident in her car. I had given her a Volvo because I thought this was advertised as the strongest car, the one that will not kill you if you have an accident. And she never got a scratch on it. And I was very proud of that fact. She was very careful. She would drive from Weston, Connecticut to Bedford, New York with no trouble, even in her 90s. And I thought, you know, I can do something for the aging population. I'm entering the geriatric stage of life. Over 65, people say you're a geriatric. It's not my favorite word, but I thought that this was something that I could actually make a difference in.
Well, people are living longer.
Very much so. And we have what's called in my book and elsewhere the silver tsunami occurring, which means that people, the population will be more over 65 in the United States than under 65 in a very short time. The baby boomers are coming of age.
How old was your mother, Martha Costiera, when she died?
93.
I remember her. It must have been 15 or 20 years ago, making, I think it was a holiday stolen with you on your television show.
And she had really good hands for yeast doughs, for pierogi dough, for rolling galumpki. She was a really good cook and up until her last days had a very good palate for food.
Well, did you ever have to serve as her caretaker, as so many people do?
No, I didn't.
So you were lucky.
We were all very lucky. My mom had 6 kids. She remained independent until the last 13 days of her life when she suffered a heart attack and went into the hospital and didn't come out. But it was her choice. I mean, I talked to her, and I said, Mom, you know, you could come out of this. And she said, you know, I'm tired. That's what she said. And I thought, well, my mother really does deserve – and she had already broken ground on the hospital, by the way, and it was in the process of being opened.
At Mount Sinai.
Yeah, when she finally died. But she was a good example to all of us, reading the newspapers cover to cover every day, being able to converse in a very erudite manner about the news and other things going on. And when things didn't – somebody asked her about some movie star once. She said, what does that have to do with me, actually? And she didn't care, but she did care about what was going on elsewhere in Washington and even in Connecticut and the politics.
The foreword to your book, which is called Living the Good Life, A Practical Guide to Caring for Yourself and Others, is by the director of the Martha Stewart Center for Living at Mount Sinai Hospital, Audrey Chun.
Yes.
It would have been Robert Butler if he hadn't died so young.
Well, Robert was a phenomenal founder of the geriatric practice at Mount Sinai. It is the oldest geriatric practice in the Americas. That was one of the reasons why I worked with them on this center, because they had such a good basis in geriatric medicine.
He was a regular visitor to this show.
Oh, I'm sure.
In the early days when we had a different name. We were called Senior Edition in those days.
Uh-huh. Well, he was very, very voluble about the crisis facing Americans in the aging process. And it is a crisis because, and I pointed out in the book, there is only one geriatrician for every 8,500 or 9,000 people over 65.
Really? When we compare that to pediatricians.
Or plastic surgeons. Okay,
talking about plastic surgery. I guess there's more money in plastic surgery.
Well, but in the last 5 years since the center opened, and it is prototypical for other centers of this type in other hospitals, since that is and since this whole silver tsunami has gotten a lot more attention, the practice of geriatric medicine is picking up. And more medical students are finding that this might be a good area in which to enter. It's uncrowded, it's in demand, it's very necessary. And that's where a lot of money is, too.
Well, but plastic surgeons don't have to deal with insurance companies.
That's right.
You testified before the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. What were you there to talk about?
Well, to talk about the center, to talk about the crisis facing so many of us, to talk about what are we going to do for this population that really does need medical attention. They need advice. They need exercise advice, diet advice. Money advice. They don't know how to live. They don't know where to live. Housing for elders is at a crisis point now. When I say housing, I mean something with some something to aid you to get through the day. Meals. Insurance companies are looking the other way. Our health programs are insufficient for the aging population. And this whole thing about the shortage of doctors. is a real, real problem.
What do you mean when you say that it's sometimes the simple solutions that provide the answers?
Well, if the aging population starts thinking about the future a little bit sooner, about eating better, about not gaining weight, about exercising more regularly, about moving to a climate that's more conducive to the aging process, to all of those things are very, very important to think about earlier than later.
And if somebody has never exercised, does it help if suddenly at the age of 65, 70, whatever, they start exercising?
Of course it helps. Walking,
they haven't already deteriorated?
No, not at 65. I think mobility is of utmost importance as you age. Sitting in a wheelchair, getting fatter and fatter and fatter and not moving, you're not going to live very long in that position. So it's very important to really, and it's hard work. I mean, this is the subject of aging and the process of aging is hard work. It's not a simple thing.
And you talk about things like losing our physical sense of balance as we age and the things that we have to do to overcome that.
Exactly. That's why I have made a vow. I had my birthday last week, and I climbed up precipice in Acadia National Park. Do you know what that is? That's the hardest climb in the park, up to the top of Mount Champlain.
Yeah, but you also climbed Kilimanjaro for vacation.
I did.
I mean, most of us are not going to do that, Martha.
No,
I'm
but
sorry.
The hikes are really good for you. The strength that you need to pull yourself up is intense. But, you know, if you don't keep at it and you don't ride that bike or you don't get on the treadmill, you're just shortening your life.
Well, for me, if somebody said to me, hey, let's take a vacation, we're going to climb Kilimanjaro, I'd say, can't we just walk through the Louvre instead? There's a lot of walking involved.
Well, Kilimanjaro is not for the faint of heart. It's a hard hike at a high altitude.
There are things that people have to do. I mentioned balance. There are exercises that we can do to maintain our balance.
Oh, yeah. Yoga is, I think, one of the very, very best things one can do. And doing any of the poses that cause you to balance on one foot. There's a course downtown where they teach you how to behave like a child. And you know how children run along curbs and up and down and up and down? And they do all of that in the course.
And kids are doing that because they are actually teaching themselves to develop a sense of balance.
Develop balance, right. So why don't adults do that more? And so I do that all the time. I'm always walking up and down on the curbs, turning around, walking backwards. I try to do those things just by habit, force of habit, and it really helps. But yoga, I love yoga for the aging process.
We'll take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about optimism and whether you think that doing crossword puzzles really helps. My guest is Martha Stewart, who has written, her latest book, unlike some of the other ones that she has written in the past. This one is Living the Good Long Life, A Practical Guide to Caring for Yourself and Others from Clarkson Potter. There's another book coming out later that's more along the lines of what we've expected. We'll talk about Martha Stewart cakes as well. stay with us for more. We're back with Martha Stewart, whose latest book is Living the Good Long Life, A Practical Guide to Caring for Yourself and Others. It's published by Clarkson Potter and grows out of, I guess, to some degree, Martha Stewart's work with the Martha Stewart Center for Living at Mount Sinai Hospital. It was one thing to create that center, another thing to start getting involved in theory.
Yes, but it was also a pledge to the Clinton Global Initiative. I don't know if you know that, but President Clinton has this initiative every year. And I made a pledge about 7 years ago to write a book on the process of aging and caregiving. So this is it. And I felt really proud that I actually accomplished that pledge in amongst all the other things that I have to do. But this book took a long time to write. We talked to lots and lots of experts, lots of people in this field, and got good advice from them. And I think it's a very useful guide.
Well, have we thought much about, as a society, about how to make the second half of our lives productive and happy?
I don't think we've thought about it enough. And maybe there should be a course about it that you take when you're 40 years old, just a little primer. But this book could help be one of those primers that we have to read that start us thinking about, you know, where are we going to live?
Well,
how are we going to live?
There are those people who can't wait until they can retire. There's the cliche of the people out in the golf courses the minute they can go out there. And then there are others who don't ever want to retire. Should we rethink retirement age?
I think retirement age has been rethought. I think it's getting older and older.
Sometimes out of necessity. People can't afford to retire younger.
Well, yes, now with an economic downturn, people have to stay on the payroll longer than they want to with the loss of pensions and the loss of in stock markets, people are feeling, you know, obligated to work longer. But I think it's better. I personally think it's better to stay active, curious, busy. It can be volunteer work. It can be teaching after hours. It can be, there's a lot of things one can do to use one's talents even after a mandatory retirement.
Well, one trait that you highlight in terms of creating a healthy old age is optimism. Have you been an optimistic person?
All my life.
No.
It's gotten me through the lemon periods.
you've had some rough times.
The sour periods. But it's also...
You were an optimist in prison?
Of course. Every single day.
Well, what were you optimistic about? I'm getting out tomorrow?
No, optimistic about dealing with the crisis in a positive way, realizing that, you know, I can live without anything really much, and knowing that, being strong enough to put up with what you have to put up with. I'm a total optimist.
When you published the 25-year edition of your book, Entertaining, it included a picture of a creche that wasn't featured in the first edition. You had made it while you were in prison?
Yeah. I found where I was, Alderson, it was called. They had a fantastic room, a giant room filled with porcelain molds for ceramics. And I looked through all the molds and I found an entire creche with all the figures, the baby Jesus all the way through the wise men and the donkeys and the camels. You're only allowed to make, I think, three objects while you were in a certain amount of time. But I persuaded them that the coal creche was one object, even though it was made up of parts. So I was busy every single night creating this amazingly beautiful, beautiful creche.
Well, you were lucky because you already knew a lot about crafts.
Well, I knew how to pour clay and mix clay and paint and fire and do all that stuff because I had studied ceramics when I was a child. It was so much fun.
But did you have to struggle to make that experience a positive one? Did you think that perhaps that was the downside of becoming a prominent figure in society?
No, it's not a downside. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, basically. And I knew there was nothing I could do to counteract what was going on. So, what are you going to do? You have to be positive. You have to get up every day with energy and a light heart and get on with it. I read more books, wrote more letters, spent more time talking to people than I'd had time to do before or after. It was really great.
You remain optimistic through business downturns as well?
Well, you have to focus, to use your focus to get in and out of difficulties.
We're familiar with the risks of aging, frailer health, less mental agility. Are there things that we can do other than if we're afflicted by something like Alzheimer's? But are there things that we can do to keep us more mentally agile get older?
I think diet really does keep your brain a little bit more healthy and active. I think there's things that you can be eating drinking that will be beneficial. Every day I wake up, I have green juice that we make in a juicer. And I put in the spinach, the ginger, the grapefruit peel,
so
the
orange peel. This is kind of like a smoothie.
No, it's not a smoothie. It's a juice because it's extracted. A smoothie incorporates everything that you put in. It's just blended. And it is mint, parsley, celery, cucumber, all good things. Nothing too strong tasting. I don't want to get a stomach ache from the stuff. But I drink a large glass of that every single morning. It really is energizing. It's very good for you. Then I get in my car, I come to New York, and I work on Sudoku, which is very fun. I work on the crossword puzzle. I'm not as good at crossword puzzles as I used to be. I don't know why. I don't know if it's the puzzles themselves. Sometimes I think, oh, my God, these puzzles are very different, and they're changing all the time. But it's interesting to see. Some days I zip through a puzzle, and some days I struggle.
Well, on Monday you zip through the puzzle. By Friday and Saturday you're struggling, but that's everybody.
That's everybody. Oh, good. I am glad to hear that.
And Sunday is somewhere in the middle. You also say you take a different route every day. There are only so many roads from Connecticut, well, upstate New York, I guess, too.
I'm in Westchester. No, I take the main highway, but then once I'm in the city, I'm on different streets all the time. I don't like to go across 23rd Street all the time. There's not that much to see after you've seen it 10 times. So I learn about New York. I learn where I am. If I'm driving or walking, I try to take a different route. That keeps your mind and you more aware of what's happening around you. I think even in the country, I go up and down all the different roads because it's more interesting.
You probably recognize her voice if you just tuned in, but it's Martha Stewart. We're talking about her latest book, Living the Good Long Life, A Practical Guide to Caring for Yourself and Others. It's published by Clarkson Potter. One of the important things you say is that we should try to maintain a good weight. Well, obviously not the weight we had when we were in college.
Right, and there are other measurements that if you could maintain, I'm sure you would live longer, like your waist is supposed to be the same diameter as your head.
Oh my!
Yeah, can you imagine?
That's not happening.
Yeah. But that's a good thing to even think about.
Well, but most people, in my case, once I quit smoking, my weight went up. But one of the things I realized as I got older was, in the past, if I wanted to lose weight, I just cut out sweets for a while. And now, if I cut out sweets, it just nothing seems to change.
Nothing happens. Yeah. Well, it's different. Your metabolism does change over time, and it's adjusting the amount of intake. I mean, we can do with a lot less food than we actually put in our mouths, and that's totally proven. But I am not a dieter. And I'm not a binger. So I try very, very hard to eat as healthfully as I possibly can. But I still like a sweet. And I still like I'm not a big ice cream eater, but I do like a sorbet every now and then. And I do like I like the Kunamon that is made downtown, you know.
Well, I fondly remember an episode on your show with you and Julia Child making croquembouche together.
Yeah, crunch in the mouth.
And the structure of yours seemed much more stable than the one that Julia put together. In this book, you have recipes for honey roasted plums and pineapple with ginger yogurt sauce. Feels like a bit of a letdown in the dessert category.
But you can still, at holiday time, I always say you can have a bite of croquembouche that's cream puffs filled with a creme pâtissière and stuck together with caramel. But it's not every day. You just have to. It's like your dog. A fat dog is not going to live long.
Well, Julia used to say when people asked about all the butter she put into her recipes, well, that makes the recipe better, but you don't have to eat it every day.
That's right, and you don't have to eat all of it.
You're coming out with a book called Martha Stewart Cakes. Are they going to be less sugary?
No,
because I have a friend who says I just cut the sugar in half. And sometimes that's okay, and sometimes that really leads to a failed recipe. Yeah. You need the bulk of the sugar.
No, these are tasty, delicious, beautiful cakes. Some are less fattening than others, and you'll be able to tell from both the text and the pictures. But it's a great book, and it's in follows our series of cupcakes, cookies, and pies and tarts, and fantastic cakes. Everybody's going to want this book.
And you say that food is an important part of leading a healthy, long life. What's a blue zone diet?
Well, that's more like what the Mediterranean people eat. Less butter, more olive oil, more fresh vegetables, less meat, more fish. That's the kind of diet that really will extend your life rather than a heavy carbohydrate meat diet that so many of us sort of fall into because it's cheaper and easier.
Well, does our ability to eat and process certain foods change as we get older?
And that's why really you should keep your body working. You keep that metabolism working better by eating less difficult foods. Like fatty meats are really bad for you. And the fatty meats that are sold in the grocery stores now with all the hormones and all the additives and the bad life of the animal, those are the things that we should be avoiding. And I'm very much for sustainably raised food, both vegetable and animal. I think it's very important for us to look for that kind of food, to buy the eggs from the free-range chickens that are eating good food and not chemicals. Not tortured chickens. You know, it's all of that is very important to a good long life.
Are you heartened by the growth of all these farmers markets?
I am thrilled.
We've been seeing in New York, they're all over the place now.
Yes, and to encourage these small farmers to work very very hard on building up a clientele and a business is so exciting for all of us.
What are your thoughts about the people who have been cutting out gluten from their diet? People who don't have celiac disease?
Well, it seems to work in terms of loss of weight. I think that it's not only celiac disease, it's a gluten intolerance too that's not as serious as celiac. But I don't think it's so much the wheat. It might be the genetically modified wheat that we're eating, but I think it's also the way the wheat is grown and processed. There are so many chemicals pumped into the ground now to encourage the rapid growth of a crop. There are so many chemicals used in the processing of that wheat or the corn that is making those crops much less reliable and healthy. And I really watch out for all of that stuff. I've even ground my own wheat to make flour. I mean, it's something that we're all looking at very, very closely, all of us who are really interested in how to prolong our lives in a healthy way.
Well, every time I have had somebody on the show who's talked about eating locally and eating healthier, I receive a slew of complaints from listeners that say, well, it's okay for these people. They have money. But I'm poor. I can't afford that kind of stuff.
Oh, no. I totally sympathize with all of those people who say that. I bring in my eggs to my office every day, and I send out an email, and I say four to a person. You know the drill. And they're gone in a second. I bring in extra asparagus. One lady told me in the office said, I love asparagus, but I can't pay $4.99 a pound for them for me and my family. So this is such a treat to get asparagus. But I think you can carefully pick and choose in the grocery stores foods that will help you and nourish you.
And then people like Mark Bittman emphasize eating at home.
Oh, yes. Oh, eating out every single day, unless you can eat out at the very best restaurants. Oh, it's the worst thing you could possibly do for yourself. And opening cans. I haven't opened a can in a very long time. When was the last time you opened a can?
When I had to feed a dog.
Oh, so you opened cans for dogs. Okay.
Well,
not for yourself.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, okay. Well, but many people live out of cans.
You include a chapter on sleeping. Don't you get by in just 3 or 4 hours?
I'm a bad sleeper. And with the advent of the iPad and the availability of every movie under the sun, I am really in trouble now.
Because doctors will tell you that if you don't get a good night's sleep, it really can affect your health.
Yes.
But I've always wondered on those nights when I can't sleep, how do you just force yourself to sleep?
Well, you can. I mean, but a lot of people are taking sleeping aids, which I refuse to do because I live in a house full of animals. I live in a wooden house that could, you know, burn down. I don't want to be drugged when I go to sleep. But that said, I think it is important to get a good night's sleep if you possibly can. But if it's 5 solid hours or 4 solid hours, that's better than a fitful night just lying there.
Do people have more problems sleeping as they age?
I don't know. I'm not sure that some do or some don't. I think it's very, very personal.
Now, many people are concerned about the wrinkles that come automatically. There's pretty much nothing you can do about it, except hope that you have good genes.
Yeah, well, it's not only genes, but it is skin, hair, nails, bones. All of this can be helped with appropriate vitamins, minerals, supplements, herbs.
Sunscreen?
Oh, sunscreen is extremely important. I slather myself with sunscreen every single day and cover up when I'm outside.
We have very little time left, but I just wanted to mention that you suggest making a bucket list.
Yes, but that bucket list is not, you know, the 10 places where you want to go. It's 10 things.
I thought I'd end with that.
Yeah, 10 things that one should do, including the use of sunscreen and eating well and exercising regularly and talking to others, having meaningful conversations, staying curious. All of those things should be on your list.
And you might also put on your list reading Martha's latest book, Martha Stewart's Living the Good Long Life, A Practical Guide to Caring for Yourself and Others. It's published by Clarkson Potter. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Very nice to be here, Leonard.